Johnny Depp goes undercover, Nathan Fillion's gotta go fast, and John Voight is swallowed whole this week on 30-2010.
30-2010, 30-2010, three decades every show, sometimes associated videos. 30-2010, 30-2010, the presses are awaiting us. We're going to the 80s and the 90s and 2000s.
Welcome to a new episode of 30-2010, a weekly look back at what happened 30 years ago, 20 years ago, and 10 years ago. That's 1987, 97, and 2007, week by week. I'm one of your hosts, Brett Elston.
And I'm Diamond Dog Chris Antista.
I'm David L. Halper.
I'm Diana Goodman, and I demand the finest wines here, and I demand them now.
So glad you're here to talk about that. We clarified off mic, we are not talking about Donnie Brasco, in which Johnny Depp goes undercover.
I'm sure he does this
numerous
times.
Hang tight.
We'll be there shortly, because we begin in 1987 every week. We are at April 7th through the 13th. We go week by week. We already wrapped up all of 2016's episodes, obviously, but that was all of 86, 96, and 06. And if you want to go through the backlog, you can find out more at 302010.net. Wondery.com/302010. Or
it doesn't matter what
go to iTunes.
What week it is. This is an ADD journey.
Yes.
Through 30 years ago and 20 years ago and 10 years ago to this week.
Yes. And we begin in 1987, April 10th. A bit of news before we start in with the movies of the week. And there's a note in here that says, as far as anyone can tell, the term steampunk is used for the first time by sci-fi author K.W. Jeter in a letter to Locust Magazine.
Really?
Yep.
I'm surprised it's that recent.
I know. You'd think it was an old-timey.
Yeah.
With lots of diesel and gears. And
in the future, they'll call us steampunk.
And I've seen, like, that word thrown around a lot, like, in the last 10 years or so, where it's like, well, that, like, what really qualifies steampunk? Like, there has to be a certain level of technology.
A monocle?
Gears brass, have to produce steam.
It's like a lot of
brass goggles.
Brass goggles and cogs.
But leather top hats.
Yeah.
But, like, you can have, like, airships and crazy technology.
Yes.
It just has to be powered by, like, turn-of-the-century technology.
Yeah, it's like Jules Verne technology.
Jules Verne. Or that guy who controls Figment in the Epcot.
If there's, if there's even a spark of electricity, the whole thing's called off.
Yes.
Yep. There can't be some... surely there's one vicious mad scientist who has harnessed the power of the atom.
Durable-powered steam engine.
But we'll go into movies with... we begin 1987, April 7th through the 13th. The Secret of My Success.
Yeah.
Michael J. Fizzle.
And I wrote about it, and it's one of the articles I post every year, 11 movie posters ruined by 9/11. Because they're shooting Michael J. Fox out of a champagne bottle at the Twin Towers.
Yes, I remember this. And a piece of the trailer.
Yeah.
All right, but don't beg, okay? It's embarrassing.
They were a merger made in heaven.
That wasn't bad.
That's when everything else...
Howard, please.
...went to hell.
Just so you know, it's the 80s. I wanted to make sure you're sure about... You're positive this is the 80s. Wall Street romantic comedy with Walking on Sunshine.
The relatable Wall Street.
Yes, during the Wall Street days. This is 80s as fuck. Asking you to sympathize with this yuppie motherfucker played by Michael J. Fox.
He's like faking his way into Wall Street or something.
Yeah, he's trying to be... He wants to be a big shit Wall Street executive.
Yeah.
He gets laid off from his company. But luckily, his uncle is the head... of a company, but puts him in the mailroom. He creates a fake persona, ends up sleeping with his uncle's wife and his boss, his fake boss at the company, played by Helen Slater, who was Supergirl. Yeah.
Wow.
But more notable than anything, I've been on a constant mission to find a song that most embodies a decade. And the Night Ranger theme to Secret to My Success, I think I finally found the most 80s song of all time. Sister Christian, Night Ranger fame,
yeah.
Wrote the theme...
Right. Well, I'm already in there. What a change for the new
modern man. Oh, I know this song. With all this, it seems like I'm dying for more. The streets are on fire, never seen it before. It's like the sound of electric guitar. Oh.
Keep going.
God.
Keep going!
Yes.
It's like St. Elmo's Fire.
Yes.
There you go.
Good God.
The secret of my success is spelled with a dollar sign as the last S, by the way. It is how it is spelled.
Terrible SEO.
It's how it pops. I love it. It's how it pops up in search engines, because IMDb is one of the first entry, and it's accurate to the title.
Man.
This movie blows.
That song rules.
It's amazing. And the video is even better.
I have to imagine at least like 18 times during that video someone's pulling down sunglasses.
No,
it looks like one shot.
It's one shot that they fade in and out of around like a fucking 1950s car. It's beautiful.
A lot of neon and hair.
Oh, the hair.
And
the hair
directed,
is majestic.
Secret of My Success, directed by Herbert Ross, and I think I'm done.
That's weird,
yeah.
though.
Steel Magnolias? Did he do Steel Magnolias?
I might have done Steel Magnolias. He definitely did The Turning Point, which is like Steel Magnolias, but with dancing.
Also at this week, Three for the Road, Charlie Sheen, Alan Ruck, hot off of two other films.
That's the only reason I want to play the piece of this trailer.
Platoon's Charlie Sheen, Goonies' Cary Grant, and Ferris Bueller's Alan Ruck.
Cool.
That's it. It's just like, that's what a weird three-movie combo to promote a film about political aides having to transport a senator's daughter to an insane asylum. It's a comedy!
The idea of any comedy being like, Platoon's Charlie Sheen is a cut-up and also damaged by war.
But apparently, this flopped despite the star power
that
was, you know, listed there.
Yeah. Yeah, you can see why if you watch the rest of the trailer. And I say don't, because there's a better movie that I am deeply ashamed that I've never seen. And I know Diana has. And it should be very clip-worthy, but, like, everything I looked up, like, requires a ton of context. It'd be With Nail and I.
Yeah,
yes.
With Nail and I.
Also at this week, With Nail and I. Richard
Wonderful
Grant.
Wonderful movie.
Paul McGann.
Yep. This is, I mean, it's a cult classic, but really it's like a cult classic in Britain.
Yeah.
I don't know. For some reason, it's one of those movies, and we'll get to one in the next segment, that just, I don't know why it didn't cross over to America. Mm-hmm. I don't know why more Americans haven't seen it. It is really funny, and it also, like, captures a kind of moment for people in that they're like, with Nail and I, Paul McGann's character doesn't have a name. Never find out what his name is. Are these two like struggling actor types who live just the shittiest existence, and it's just they live in this pit and it's disgusting and the heat's been turned off. So like pretty much at the beginning of the movie, Richard E. Grant just covers himself with like Icy Hot and he's like, this way I'll stay warm, there's none for you.
And they're just constantly drunk throughout the whole film.
They're just constantly drunk and terrible. And you know, then they go off to the country with Uncle Monty, who's Richard Griffiths, R.I.P., Harry Potter's uncle.
Yep.
Who's sort of predatory and gay, but also kind of sweet and nice. And they just run amok. It's about drunkenly running amok and having no real responsibilities and trying to, like, kind of embrace sort of, like, the freedom of, like, hippies and stuff, but then they point out, like, they're selling hippie wigs at Walmart, man. It's over.
My major memory of this film, which shows how old I am, but also how young all the streaming technology is, in 2005, I went to New York with my buddy Mike, and we went to a famous record store there, and he paid $40 for an import copy of this film.
Wow.
Because, like, I have never been able to find this, ever. Yeah. And who has trouble? The only time you have a trouble finding a film is if it has Alan Ruck and Charlie Sheen in it.
That's how I was with Godzilla Destroy All Monsters.
Yeah.
$40
for one film that he could not find, which is...
Yep.
There are people right now who hate us for not knowing more about this film. You would recognize the cover of the film poster because it's Ralph Steadman, the guy who did Hunter Thompson's Fear and Loathing Art. Neat.
It's a lot of fun. It's probably my big recommend for the week is... Yeah, just, you know... Get yourself a big bottle of cheap wine and settle in, watch With Nail and I. Watch them tear up the place.
I'm on it.
Yeah. And also Silent Night, Deadly Night 2, which I've never seen.
Me neither. Yeah.
Garbage Day!
Huh?
No!
It's the dude taking out the trash, and then he puts the can down, and this dude, this jockey dude in a sweater, standing half a mile away. Shoots him with a revolver.
I mostly know about this from like bad movie review sites where huge chunks of Silent Night, Deadly Night 2 are just clips from the first one.
Wow. Mm.
It's one of those like...
That's awful.
This kid saw this horrible thing. This horrible thing happened. Tell us about it, Billy. Well, it all started with 45 minutes of clips. It's not even a movie.
And another movie I saw.
You think this movie's bad?
But, I mean, it's worth it for Garbage Day.
Yeah, and I shouldn't even play this clip, but it makes me very happy how long this voiceover actor's been working. And one of the last times Disney released its movies in theaters, A re-release of the last film in what I call the Phil Harris trilogy. I was doing some Jungle Book work. He's Baloo. Mm-hmm. He's Little John and Robin Hood, and he's a cat from this film.
It's back exclusively in movie theaters. Disney's most cataclysmic comedy ever, The Aristocats.
This is outrageous. This is crazy.
Get to the very end. I want to hear Phil Harris just once.
Meow.
Yeah. this is... It's one of the least beloved Disney films, I think, over here, but when we were in Japan, has fallen in love with Marie, the white cat, and she is a new lease on life in a merchandise line, I think, that's come across the ocean here. She in America.
I mean,
but
it's a cute white cat that even if you don't know what it is,
she
looks fluffy.
As a little kid, I'd be like, okay.
We're watching a live dance routine with costume characters. Mickey, Goofy, Donald, Marie? Marie? Japan loves Marie.
And Max was there?
Mm-hmm.
He was. It's a family of cats who are performers, and there's a disgusting joke ending to it.
There's a... No, that's the Aristocrats.
Speaking of SEO problems, man, if there's just one family out there that rented the wrong movie,
please.
My life will be worthwhile.
But yeah, it's... When was the last time this was released? Is there a Blu-ray?
There's a Blu-ray. There's no world where the Aristocats can be released in theaters anymore. As it's low popularity, considering how many other Disney movies.
Is this the We Are Siamese, or is that...
No, that's Lady and the Tramp.
Okay.
But how many races?
A funny class comedy with felines.
I just kind of thought of it as just Lady and the Tramp with cats.
Yeah. And less sex. Okay.
TV this week, 1987.
A couple little things. April 10th, 1987 was the final episode of Amazing Stories. There are no more Amazing Stories to tell.
It's a bummer. Steven Spielberg wanted to make a family-friendly Twilight Zone anthology show and got a bunch of cool directors and people involved, and the world didn't care.
This one has a cool director and cool people, and it's directed by Tobe Hooper?
Yeah.
Starring Dick Shawn of It's a Mad, 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 Mad World, as well as Lorraine Newman from SNL and Weird Al from Being Weird NL.
And he just posted a picture of him like a week or two, probably about 3 weeks ago now, of him in makeup as some sort of cabbage-headed guy.
That.
Yeah, and that's from this, from the last episode of
Weird Al was the cabbage-headed guy?
I believe so.
Got a cabbage for a head.
that's
the wrong show.
Yes. But it happened. Maybe
you
could have influenced.
You guys want to see me smash some vegetables?
Tobe Hooper, as you'll know, is the almost director of Poltergeist. I kid the Hooper. You did a good job. Steven didn't do the whole thing.
Well, obviously, there's no bad blood if he's still getting hired for Amazing Stories. Mm-hmm. That's cool.
So on CBS, on April 12th, 1987, the TV movie Escape from Sobibor airs, which I see that title and I'm like, is this a Lord of the Rings thing? No, it's quite different.
Run, baby, run, escape from Sobibor.
It's about a mass escape from a Nazi death camp. But I have a clip from the trailer with some of the cast.
Now, we cannot leave hundreds behind to be slaughtered. Therefore, the escape we plan must be for every prisoner in Sobibor.
Rutger Hauer of Blood of Heroes and Blind Fury.
Most of the SS are dead. It's everyone for himself now.
Joanna Pakula of Marked for Death. Alan Arkin of Coupe de Ville and Catch 22.
There's no turning back now.
Escape from Sobibor. The story.
Whoa!
There's a...
Whoa.
Story the Nazis could not hide.
Yeah. Hang on, Nazis. You're not hiding this.
This is also a fantastic moment to mention the state of VHS in 1987.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
For those that don't remember, this Escape from Sobibor trailer for the VHS ends with how much it costs.
Yeah. Also, it's very tone deaf that there is like an NBA Jam and the like beat in the background.
The
like
music, the music in the background set to nothing but people escaping a Nazi camp is like maybe a little less rocking.
Yeah.
A little more intense. This movie, this VHS tape is $90.
Wow. Yeah.
Because that's how much tapes used to cost.
I thought that was like because they have to they're trying to sell them to rental stores.
Yes. Yeah. But that's the thing is these you couldn't walk into Walmart and be like, "Oh, let me buy a movie." Yeah. It was
Escape
like
from Sobibor.
Yeah, but like if I remember when I was able to get Terminator 2 on VHS, it was only because the video store had so many and my dad on his truck route finally was like, "Hey, we got one that's been watched 1,000 times. Do you want one for $30?"
Yeah. I bought Fight Club for $60.
Mom got us a VHS once that she got from a friend. She didn't spend this much, thankfully. What about Bob VHS? That was $80.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, this movie's not worth $8.
Yeah. Man. No, that's how it would go. It would go first at the like $90 price point.
Yeah.
available, and the only people that would buy that at that price point would be crazy people or rental stores, and then eventually,
yeah,
I don't know, like a month later, then it becomes commercially available.
I don't feel like there was a point. I mean, I think it was by the time VHSs were just like totally plentiful, DVD was almost the round.
Yeah.
Like by the time there was like, okay, a new movie's out on VHS, it's like 94, 95.
Yep.
Like Jurassic Park, when it came out to VHS, that was that at least launched for like $25, $30.
Yeah, but
and that was
it's
like
the distinction of home video.
Yeah. Right.
Video
I'm
home
willing
video.
To bet though that a couple weeks before it came for $20 on store shelves, it was available for
$90. Could be, yeah.
I bet not in that case. But
because I remember the commercial, like Jurassic Park coming this October for $24.98.
Only certain movies merited that. Obviously, all Disney clamshells.
Yeah, yeah.
If you did, if you didn't know that, and that's they make the distinction of like coming soon to home video.
Yeah,
there
yeah.
was video in VHS. Yeah. That was not for you. That was for Blockbuster and Movie Gallery.
Speaking of Blockbusters on TV,
yeah, the big TV show this week, Fox is continuing its epic launch with 21 Jump Street.
Ooh, let's hear some theme song. Very 80s.
This is still so 50s.
Yeah.
Like,
go to sock hop.
I don't even connect this.
All right,
there it is.
80s.
Down on.
I never watched this show.
Every note in this song is unpredictable.
Yeah.
Yeah, wow. It's like
actually before this song, like, I put it like 10 seconds into the song because it's 10 seconds of like almost like a church organ.
Spray painting the words Jump Street. But for what it's worth, like
waste
if you're wondering,
time, man.
If you're wondering where the movie came from and why,
the two movies,
like, the two movies, there was a show for how many years? Like
4 years.
Mm-hmm.
So, Johnny Depp was the star.
Richard Grieco.
He popped up in the second season. Another star of the show was Holly Robinson. She played about to Mr. Cooper, but
Holly Robinson Pete.
Yes, and she did the theme song. She was the singer there. But yes, it was like 4 seasons. Then Johnny Depp left, and they did the 5th season in syndication, and it wasn't as popular. But it was like it was kind of a groundbreaking show, like because it was about a group of cops who would go to high schools and colleges because they were young enough to like go undercover there, and they would it would cover like touchy topics like alcohol and drug abuse, hate crimes, AIDS, like really
a real young people show. Which wasn't really dramatized on network television.
I mean, it was
Fox
like totally noticing, hey, there's a market for this, like Married with Children, Simpsons, 21 Jump Street.
Yeah,
like,
teenagers, young adults.
Yeah, we'll go after the demographics that the big three don't want.
Yeah.
But that's it for TV this week.
Video games this week, still not a lot happening in the early days of the NES, 1987. The Nintendo does have some games out. We talked about RC Pro-Am recently, the classic remote control racing game. But two Konami games, if you know Konami.
I do.
Yes.
You should know them from Contra and Gradius fame. But two games that
that's it.
Some of you may know is Track and Field.
Yeah.
The arcade game, classic button
My
masher.
My fingers hurt just hearing
where
about
you just
it.
Like mash the buttons as hard as you can and bust up the mics. But that came to the NES as well as Russian Attack, which is Rush and Attack.
Rush.
Ooh. I thought it was Rush and Attack.
It is. It's like Chip and Dale.
Yeah.
Right. Rush. But Rush, you're supposed to read it as in
Rush
and Attack.
So you have to go fight the Canadian band and stop them before Geddy Lee strikes again.
I've always described Rush and Attack as Contra but without the guns.
So it moves a lot slower.
Yeah.
You only have a knife. Yeah, I remember playing it, renting it, and being like, this isn't as good as Contra.
Yeah.
Whereas Contra is like, it has a name that invokes like, oh, like that big scandal from a few years ago.
Yeah.
But it's about fighting aliens in the jungle.
Mm-hmm.
And then whereas Russian Attack is like, I'm just a guy with a gun. And
it's like a vague,
you have a knife.
Reagan would want you to play this.
And it has this vague vague Cold War stuff, and you called it Russian Attack.
Yeah. I mean, I like the wordplay there.
It's cute.
It's literally what you're doing. You're rushing across the screen and attacking. Mm-hmm. And once in a while, you'll get a giant rocket launcher or something, and it's like, Why are you just giving me the two biggest extremes, like a piddly knife and a giant rocket launcher? Where's can I have a gun? Can I please have a gun?
But this is also the era of Konami. If you were playing NES games back in the day, I did a few articles about this on Radar back in the day about game packaging and how in the early NES days it was like the Wild West. When you buy a video game today, it is uniform packaging. Yeah. Every PlayStation box has you got to have the logo here and it has to be this size. The Xbox logo has to be over here. Mm-hmm. You got to have this branding on the left and you got to put all this eFig stuff for English, French Canadian, like
the inside term people efix. I've never heard it spoken on a microphone.
You
before.
Have to have all these very specific parameters. In the '80s, who cares? Do whatever you want, wherever you want. I don't care where you put anything. Mm-hmm. So Konami had their own gray boxes.
Yeah. Yeah.
So when you see Contra, Track and Field, Life Force, Gradius, Russian Attack, Jackal, any of these games, it's that you can spot it from a quarter mile. Like, oh, that's Konami box.
And it was a mark of quality for me. Like, I knew if they set out the gray box, it was going to be a good game.
Russian Attack probably being the weakest of all of them, but still, like, a reasonably competent game.
I'm actually pretty sure that's how I got burned. Assuming, Russian Attack, this sounds rad.
Yeah, and the box art's great.
It looks like Castlevania.
It's a dude holding up a gun, and it's like, dude, I'm ready to
go. Very Tom Selleck-y,
It's very Tom Selleck, yeah. But, like, yeah. Anyway.
A gun that you never use.
Yes. Taking us out, and there was an HD, like, one of those weird, we're going to make a new one for Xbox, and it's not good.
Yeah.
But music this week, 1987, Rock the House, DJ Jazzy Jeff and the Fresh Prince debut album.
Ooh.
Began 30 years ago this week.
Was this the one with Nightmare on My Street?
That's going to be later.
A gentle Ben comes up, and I forgot to look up that.
Oh,
but
oh man, I gotta say the Russian Attack Xbox Live arcade game. The subtitle is Expatriate.
Oh wow!
As in EX-Patriot.
EX. This has "Girls Ain't Nothing But Trouble" is the main song, but I think this is still early enough that like it's a thing, but I think he's the DJ, I'm the rapper, or
love that album.
Girls
of
later album, Enough But Trouble is one of the few songs that samples the I Dream of Jeannie theme.
Mention that's but also this week, Tango in the Night, Fleetwood Mac's 14th studio album that has Little Lies on it. I love Little Lies. Has sold 15 million copies. Johnny Cash is coming to town.
I'm not even sure who's in the lineup at that point.
I think it's the last one of the regular lineup before things apart.
I thought things had fallen apart before then, but maybe not.
Or maybe it's like the second status quo falls apart here. I don't remember. Yeah. I remember reading something like, oh yes, this is like the last one before big changes. Mm. But Little Lies is a good song. 15 million albums sold of that, of Tango in the Night. Johnny Cash is coming to town, his 73rd album in the 80s. And then taking us out, though, friggin' Whitesnake.
Yes.
The seventh album from Whitesnake. but it has Here I Go Again.
Yes.
And it sold 8 million copies.
I'm sorry, I love this song. It's not just the video, Tawny Kitaen and the sexy dancing on cars. It's like perfect for this song, but this is just a banging song.
It's a banger.
It's one of those things that makes me wonder what came first, the music video or the notion that these are exclusively for stripping? Is it the music that inspired these to live on in strip clubs everywhere? Or
it's not rat, all right? but we'll go out with Here I Go Again, White Snake, 30 years old this week. We'll be back this same week, 1997.
You like Laser Time shows? Then you might like Bonus Time, Laser Time's weekly bonus show exclusively on patreon.com/lasertime. Here's a taste of what you've been missing.
Hey, I think I have my first vape-related injury.
No, my lips are a little chapped, and I was... It can't happen with a cigarette. I took a hit, and then I just pulled, and like it stuck to my lip. Yank. Ugh. A bunch of skin came off. My lip still fucking hurts. Mm. Again, just want to let all the good vapors out there know in Vape City. What's going on with that?
You ever branch out and try a different flavor?
This is pumpkin cookie. They sent it to you. They sent it to me for free. Occasionally, it's Lucky Charms flavor. I'm also partial to that too.
What happened to Coastal Butter?
I'm out.
Is there not a vape podcast advertiser like that? We'll send you three flavors a month, and then
vape
every
me,
month
please.
Send back the juice you don't want.
Don't tell anybody this.
Hello, vape.
But I tried to land one. I did my best.
I'm not surprised.
Get bonus time, Laser Time's weekly, full-length, uncensored, and ad-free Patreon-exclusive podcast, as well as weekly full-length movie commentaries, wrestling and cartoon video commentaries, physical rewards, the first season of Talking Simpson, and more at patreon.com/lasertime, starting at just $5. You'll help us live, and we'll do our best to help you never be bored again.
How dare you?
I love this song. San Francisco's own Third Eye Blind.
Third Eye Blind, debut album this week, 1997, which had Jumper, Semi-Charmed Life,
Insane,
and the song bringing us in, How's It Gonna Be? Three, like, perpetual radio songs.
And Graduate.
Until radio is abolished from the surface of the earth. These songs will be blasted into space until everything is crunched again into a single atom.
Doing this song at karaoke reveals, like, what accent does Stephen J... How's it gonna be?
I would describe it as the California video store clerk.
Yes.
Yeah.
But I will say, Dave and I absolutely slay the song in karaoke. It was it was great. But yeah, again, six times platinum. This was a big, big album. 20 years old this week. Also, Dig Your Own Hole... from the Chemical Brothers, their second album, and you know it, for Block Rockin' Beats. So this continues the... It's been an ongoing topic in the 90s segment of that era of music, this industrial dance techno... just anything that gets, as someone mentioned in the comments, that gets thrown into the electronic section at Blockbuster Music or Warehouse Music or... Well, God forbid Walmart ever stocked this. I don't think they did, even when I tried to buy it. But also, out this week, Prodigy, Future Sound of London, all that stuff. Dig Me Out from Slater Kinney.
Wow, really?
Yeah. But news this week, in 1997, Tony Randall, at the age of 77, has a child with his second wife.
Oh, really?
Who is 22.
Oh.
Yeah.
The perks of being famous.
Man, he's still shooting. First wife was married for over 50 years and who died 5 years earlier. Tony Randall himself would die 9 years later in the year 2006, I guess.
Mm.
But movies this week, beginning with 1997 films Paradise Road, Frances McDormand, and Glenn Close.
I remember seeing the trailer and thinking, this is the most Oscar bait thing I've ever seen.
Yeah.
I believe it's about...
It's the story of a group of women who were imprisoned on the island of Sumatra by the Japanese during World War II and used music as a relief for their misery.
But the cast is fantastic. Glenn Close, Frances McDormand, Kate Blanchett, before she broke worldwide, just Australia, Jennifer L.,
Juliana Margulies.
Juliana Margulies. Clyde Kusatsu, who you've seen a million billion times.
A POW movie with all women.
Yeah.
Weird.
That's kind of interesting.
Never heard of it. It sounds intriguing.
Yeah, it does not get great reviews. Like, reviews.
Speaking of Australia, we also have The Castle.
Yes.
Yeah. Like, not to the level of Crocodile Dundee or... Young Einstein.
Right.
But an Australian import that did make it over here, like, onto video shelves in the not entirely overcrowded 1997 period of being pretty well regarded critically.
Yeah, I watched it last night because I had heard, you know, this one of those, like, if you're Australian, you've seen this movie.
Yeah.
Especially if you're a 90s kid, you have seen this movie. And I think I put in there that in 2010, they did a poll for Australia Day, and it was voted the most... representative of Australia, which is hilarious. Because
it's not about an outback dude. It's about a guy with the house being condemned by eminent domain, and he has to fuck with the government. So you get to see city life mainly and political life.
It's like modern Australia. I would call it like exurban, where it's like past the normal suburbs into the boonie suburbs. He lives literally right next to the
airport
runway, and under the high tension wires, and he thinks that's great. It's basically, it's this story of these like total white trash family who are the happiest, most upbeat, sweet people in the world. Like they're, everything is like, look what mom made for dessert. What do you call that? sponge cake. That's amazing. This is the best thing I ever... Like, they're all so happy
cracking
about
good sponge cake.
Everything. And then when they're going to take their house away, then he gonna goes up the chain of government, and he's always like, you can't take my house. And like, well, yeah, actually we can. Law says we give you fair compensation. What law says we can't? The law of I don't want you to.
And I love
it's really, really charming.
I love the trailer because it's clearly... People are behind pushing this movie, but uncomfortable with the amount of accents, and it's kind of the most I've ever heard a narrator talk while promoting a film.
Oh, God, speaking of accents, the version I watched had subtitles for Americans, where there's a where a guy says, like, hey, this guy's selling some Eskies, and the subtitle said, this guy's selling some coolers.
Wow.
And I'm like, wait, what?
It's justice, it's law, it's the vibe.
Vibe?
Yeah.
The story of a family.
Now that is a head of hair.
Who wouldn't let the government take their house.
But it's not a house, it's a home.
Without a fight.
In the high court today.
Case of Daryl versus Goliath.
The castle. There's no place like this home.
Yes.
So was it based on a true story at all?
No,
or just a case?
No,
of
it's it was like a super indie. They shot it in something like 10, 11 days.
Yeah.
For like $600,000-$700,000 dues, and it made more than $10 million.
Wow. Yeah,
but yeah, I'll totally recommend it because it's it captures a kind of person that like we all know someone like that. Mm-hmm. It might be our dad, even.
Yeah,
the guy who is
I
like,
ain't leaving.
No, it's more like I'm working on this house. I think we should have a patio, and I'm gonna build it. And it's like half built, and they're like, it looks great. This is great. And, you know, he looks at the high powered lines over his house, and he's like, it's amazing because electricity is so great. He just thinks that's the best. Also, Eric Bana's first movie.
Oh, wow.
Yep.
That's how my house was growing up, except my dad would finish everything. It was just like what began as a normal, like, two-story house in the middle of nowhere became a compound of, wood and trees.
Oh, the RC racetrack.
You would recognize some of this then.
He was going to make you a Hot Wheels set, and it became a racetrack.
Well, he got a racetrack, built a second building, built two carports, built a deck, built a gazebo, and it's just like, well, time to move. I need to build more stuff. We need bigger land.
And a pedestal for my above-ground pool.
Yeah, that, and, like, the mom does lots of these craft projects that are, like, really pointless, but everyone's like, wow, that's great. Yeah. And the, you know, they also, there's the brother that's like looking through the classifieds, like, hey, this guy's selling two jousting sticks. Like, well, what does he want for them? Like, $250. Like,
maybe we need some jousting
sticks. Yeah, he's like, yeah, he's dreaming, but $125 maybe. I mean, how often do jousting sticks come up? So we should buy them. You know, like the deal hunter guy that their house ends up being like, you know, kind of, ordery.
I might need a second refrigerator.
But it's such a good deal, you can't say no.
Yeah. Yep. So I need your help here, Diana, with the next film, because I don't know if it's one we can recommend. I think I'm too harsh on this film.
Okay.
The post-Tarantino white guy holding two handguns in a suit jacket phase where everyone's a hitman.
Oh, no.
So we got this.
Martin's a hitman, going home to his high school reunion.
Hi, hi, how are you?
And critics are firing off praise for this daringly different new film.
You want to tell me what that means?
Rolling Stone magazine says it's a bright burst of action
and comedy.
Love
the song, had to hear it.
John Cusack is brutally funny.
Yeah, whatever.
It's startlingly original. And critics call Gross Point Blank more fun than Pulp Fiction.
You fucking wish. But
one critic said this and he was fired.
But yeah, the wake of the Tarantino era where every movie's about a hitman falling in love, getting his driver's license. It's
heist gone wrong. So many heists.
Like,
gone
wrong. As if we're living amongst all these fucking upper class hitmen everywhere we go. And it's about John Cusack as a hitman who's a renegade hitman and doesn't want to sell out to Dan Aykroyd's hitman union. While he goes home to his high school reunion.
I hate those hitman sellouts.
It's and I
used to be about the
art. I like organic hitman.
Exactly. Back when it was indie. Back
locally
when it was pure.
Sourced. Farm to table hitman.
But it's a really good, and there's not a lot of these, a good Dan Aykroyd role.
That's true. This is Gross Point Blank.
Gross Point Blank.
I will say, I hadn't thought about it in the context of post-Tarantino stuff.
Mm-hmm.
This would be, I think, the standout. Because
I think so, too.
It's supposed to be a comedy.
Yeah, I think it's fair to say because Tarantino kind of brought in, allowed dark comedy to flourish.
Yeah, but there's not those like long conversations about pop culture minutiae.
No, that doesn't exist.
It's an action romantic comedy, which you do not see much of. And you're right, I think it's the last time Dan Aykroyd was funny.
Yeah.
This
line from him is like so un-Dan Aykroyd, and sadly it's from YouTube off someone's television because I couldn't get a copy of the film. Trying to convince him to join the Hitman unit.
No scabs. From now on, all arrangements, all contracts, all engagements are regulated. You got it.
We'll meet the new boss.
Yes.
No deal.
Okay. But we're not going to let you do your little job here.
No?
No. Because we're going to do it for you.
Is that right?
And after we do your job, we're going to do another little job.
Tell me about it.
Like I'm going to put a bullet hole in your fucking forehead and I'm going to fuck the brain hole.
Nice.
Oh.
It's like the most un-Dan Aykroyd line I've ever heard, and it's always stuck.
They're holding guns underneath the table at each other.
Yeah. The trailer is also notable for containing not one, not two, but three David Bowie songs, including Modern Love.
So this video is called Hilarious Scene, but you marked it in the doc as Stupid Scene.
Yeah.
Which one is it, Chris?
I don't know. When I think about this film, I feel like I hate it, but then I watch clips from it. Like, it's still pretty charming, and it's also a cool period for John Cusack. He was kind of a big 80s star, and he just kind of decided to start shepherding his own project. So this is co-written by Cusack and Steven Pink. Steven Pink would go on to direct Hot Tub Time Machine, but they would both usher in a High Fidelity as well. So
now, later this year, Cusack's going to go real indie for Con Air.
I was shocked. Like John Cusack, Love and Mercy, whatever happened to him? And like he might be the most unsung star of the VOD movie. He has been in like 900 straight to,
but also the movies that inspired the VOD movies, like Con Air. What Day After Tomorrow was he in that? Or he's in one of those?
Yes, he's in one of those Roland Emmerich disaster films.
2012. He's in 2012.
Gross Point Blank is an evocative period of like my friends and I liking old Cusack stuff, and he's also shepherding in new weird and quirky stuff like this in High Fidelity. So. I don't hate this Gross Point Blank. That's not a stupid scene.
I think it's pretty fun. It's got some good fight scenes. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I think he's...
A hitman goes back home to his high school reunion and falls in love with Minnie Driver.
Yeah. Yes. Hard to do. No.
Who wouldn't? And somehow we decided this was the topper of the week. I apologize.
All right, everybody. Double check your gear. Make sure it's all on board. Pray you didn't forget your bug spray.
On the rivers of the Amazon.
Wow, it's unbelievable.
This river can kill you in a thousand ways.
In the waters of the Anaconda.
There's a legend your shaman worship giant snakes as gods, protectors.
Snakes?
Anaconda.
Crazy.
I think we just heard Eric Stoltz's only line.
Yes. Wow.
He spends most of this movie unconscious.
Is he again Back to the Future'd?
No,
okay.
He almost in his own movie.
He gets a disease and like disappears in the cabin of the boat they're on for the entirety of the film.
He's just in a coma for most of the movie.
Yeah.
So a National Geographic or some documentary crew goes to the Amazon.
They go up the river.
Up the river.
To get the snack.
This might be the most, I'm going to call this one of the most 90s movies of all time.
So I have a lot of strange thoughts about this movie. So one,
Anaconda, by the way.
It's Anaconda, John Voight, Jennifer Lopez, Ice Cube, Danny Trejo, Owen Wilson. It's an insane cast.
Yeah.
Oh, Danny Trejo's barely in it, though.
He is.
That's cheating.
That's when he's best. When he shows up, you're like, it's Danny! And then he's gone.
And, well, J-Lo, she has the buns that the anaconda wants, right?
Right. Uh-huh.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Wants one.
As prophesized by Reverend...
if I'm reading the Sir Mix-a-Lot prophecy correctly.
And would you believe that Frank Welker is in the credits as...
The voice of the animal.
Credited as monkeys, jaguars, and anacondas.
His only Simpsons credit is Santa's Little Helper. That's Frank Welker.
That's amazing.
Always.
Who is Megatron and every other cartoon you ever saw.
Every time there's a monkey sound on they always go to him. He's in every movie. Yep.
But this
one day I'm going to expose how he is almost always Santa Claus.
Yes.
I'm Santa.
But Anaconda is a movie that is, they go to the Amazon to find a tribe, and in the process, John Voight's creepy, weird, accented guy on the river ends up trying to hunt this giant snake that slowly kills everybody. It's like a way shittier Jaws. And I saw this opening night, and everyone had a blast in the theater, and it is... This is on the tail end of when a made-for-sci-fi movie could still get in the theater, because this will spin off into sequels that are only on DVD.
Yep.
It will cross over with Lake Placid, which is also going to get a movie in the theaters. But I feel like this is like the last few years, and I think Pitch Black is the last movie in 2000 that is a subpar CG creature movie gets to be in a theater
because this movie is real bad.
This looks old as hell. Yeah. And what's what looks good in this though is when they do have an animatronic snake show up, it looks fucking great.
Yeah.
It looks like a robot snake, but
that's a good comparison. That it's a genre B picture, not very expensive, and a lot of people are going to get offed by the
and the amount of megastars that are in it is like Corman-esque. Like that.
There's so many. Yeah. Why is Ice Cube in it?
Yeah.
Why is was it Carrie Rohrer? Isn't it?
At least three of these people would be top lining films 10 years
within
later.
Within mere years. And so I have only seen this once, and this scene stuck with me. Mm-hmm. And my friends and I joked about this line for the rest of the year, and to this day, this pops in my head like once a year. It's John Voight describing the anaconda to other people.
That's what I hoped it was.
The whole movie's on YouTube, by the way.
Really?
It snakes out there this big. This skin is 3 or 4 years old. Whatever shed it has grown since then. But something like this has made a meal of our dear captain. What?
Takes a second, but it's worth it.
Snakes don't eat people.
Oh, they don't?
People do.
Anacondas are a perfect killing machine. They have heat sensors. A warm body like Mateo's.
Mateo?
In the water. Wasn't hard to find. Mm-hmm. They strike, wrap around you, hold you tighter than your true love, and you get the privilege of hearing your bones break before the power of the embrace causes your veins to explode.
Explode?
Oh my
that
God!
Squeezes you tighter than your true love. Everyone in the audience. What?
If John Voight was doing that voice in a Speedy Gonzales cartoon, he would never be able to work again.
This is, I honestly, this is one of my favorite bad movies.
Yeah. It's totally revisitable.
I think the point, and it's visual, so we can't show it. Maybe put a picture up. There's a point where the snake swims by, and you can see Owen Wilson inside the snake.
Oh no.
It looks like him. It's like his face on the side of the snake. It's like
his broken nose. You can see through the.
And that's.
This is cheesy as hell.
They make the snake into the serial killer who's picking off these people one by one. And you do not have to know that much about snakes to know that they eat once and then digest for like a week.
And so he eats numerous humans
that
are gigantic things to digest, and he just keeps going after like a shark
everybody.
That takes one bite and moves on. But the big moment from this is when, big surprise, the John Voight, I'm the snake hunter, gets crushed and eaten, and then some reason gets regurgitated, and he slops out in front of J-Lo and is covered in like goo and is half digested, and then winks at her and then falls over and dies. And just Google John Voight wink and it will come up.
Oh, like, so good.
Yeah.
Oh,
but
and I thought this is implausible, but I just watched a video of a giant python in South America. They were cutting a dead man out of a snake.
Fuck.
Who had actually absolutely eaten a human.
I mean, their jaw and hinges, and they can go to town. But TV this week, in 1997.
Very eclectic week. Going to start out with something that we forgot from a recent episode. March 31st, 1997 was the debut of the Teletubbies.
Oh, God.
Again.
Say it one more time.
Again.
March 21st.
I don't have any clips of this, and I really don't have any anything that I remember beyond the baby in the sun and the Tinky Winky, I think was the gay one. According to Sherry Falwell and all them.
Trippy, disturbing show.
He had the hole in his head, the head vagina.
Yeah, so I told the story about
this. It was the handbag that everyone thought was the handbag.
And a triangle.
Yes.
Yeah. So it's like multicolored. I had a story about why these things creep me out so much because
they're homunculi.
Yes. They are what I described as sacks of multicolored sacks of human material put into a bag that grows eyes and teeth.
And has a TV on their stomach.
And then through the course of their lives get so curious about what they are, start tearing themselves open from the inside. And are horrified at what's inside them and just scream and hold their guts up to each other and then just tear each other apart. And I thought all of this in the 9 seconds as I straightened their toys in Toys R Us.
Well,
because I had to work, like, we had so much Teletubbies crap when I was working there that I'm like, The skin tone of their faces for this baby show, it looks like a corpse.
It looks like someone took a rusty knife and carved off an antique doll face and put it on a Muppet.
Yeah.
It's just black magic, evil things that giggle and like don't realize they're alive, and they terrify me. They're just weird.
But, don't remember what Teletubbies did. They would show a segment and yell again.
And then repeat it.
And the exact same segment in real time.
So the people who created this show are genius because, for one thing, the Teletubbies' mouths don't move, I believe, so you could just dub over, and they only say five things, which is each other's names, and again, and then you replay segments that you just recorded, so, man, you're saving so much money and making one
episode. 12 minutes of a show.
It doesn't cost anywhere near the amount of Sesame Street, and like everybody's like, we know, and it was mildly controversial, because people were very critical of that with their children watching it. You're replaying the same segments over and over again. It's like watching the same episode twice in one show. Why are you doing this? And like, well... Like the show's not for Sesame Street's for 5-year-olds. Yeah. We're for preschoolers.
Yeah.
And like, we don't make shows for preschoolers in this society. And Teletubbies like, fuck yeah, we do.
Yeah. So the original run was from 1997 to 2001. They did 365 episodes over 4 years.
Yeah, one for every day of the year.
Yep. In a movie, I think.
And yeah, and
did they do in a movie?
The show road trip.
What stakes could there be to warrant a movie?
I'm going to kill the
There was an evil businessman who wanted to tear down the Teletubbies' home and build a mini mall.
We've got to go to New York City!
We've got to win a rap contest. It's our ticket out of here.
And then the series
beat on the homeless.
And then the series came back in 2015, and they've had 60 more episodes since then.
Shit!
Oh, no.
We can't get that many of good shows.
Yep. Yeah. Well, good shows like Polly, which only had 5 episodes on Fox. It ended its run this week. Polly Shore had a vehicle on
this
Fox.
This is his last shot.
I'm surprised it took them 10 years for Polly Shore to get his own Fox television show. Here's a very quick promo clip.
We're a couple years too late on this, aren't we? Sorry, guys.
Polly Shore on Fox. It had to happen. Polly premieres Monday, March 3rd on Fox.
He saw a beautiful girl on his doorstep, and he gave himself whatever they
so
call
it. So he ran into the bathroom and wheezed the juice.
Yes. Nosed the juice.
5 whole episodes of this, huh?
Wow. Yep.
Another ill-fated comedy show was Fired Up, which debuted on April 10th, 1997. It is yet another comedy in the ilk of Suddenly Susan, Caroline in the City that had a plum spot on the must-see TV schedule. In this case, they were between Seinfeld and ER.
Mm-hmm.
It starred Sharon Lawrence as an executive who's fired from her job, and she has to move in with her assistant, who's played by Leah Remini, who in like, 2 or 3 years would go on the King of Queens and be set for life, set for her Scientology life.
Mm-hmm.
But the show also featured Jonathan Banks, who was Mike from Breaking Bad, as just like a...
We're a Twizzler family.
He's a duck, and people are interested.
I fucking loved it. His community character is amazing.
It ran for like 2 seasons and like 20-something episodes. It would be canceled by February of 1998.
Mm. And he is in Gremlins, when we rewatched Gremlins, remember
at the
very end, it's like, it's baby Jonathan Banks, who's already 40.
Who's already like 50.
Like, I couldn't find any good clips, but this is the midway point between Gremlins' Jonathan Banks and Breaking Bad's Jonathan Banks. So he's starting to go bald. He's like the surly...
He looks like a former boxer.
Yeah, he's a surly diner owner, so he's starting to morph more
than
Mike.
Oh, that is perfect.
Although, have you seen him, the earliest Jonathan Banks?
It's in like an anti-sex film or something like that?
It's about menstruation. Yeah.
He's a perfect person to tell.
Where he looks like a teenager, and you're like, okay, what happened in like 5 years that turned you in from like a teenager to... Jonathan Banks, human cue ball.
Don't take a chance and red wing it, kid. Pound it out on your own.
It's perfectly normal. Don't worry about it.
Every 28 days. I'll sit together on the couch.
If there's a problem, I'll come take care of it.
This will teach you how to get blood out of things.
Then you use the applicator.
Well, speaking of...
Now they come in scents. Why you gotta have scent examples?
Speaking of old scary men, Robert De Niro and Joe Pesci make a guest appearance on SNL. The episode is hosted by Rob Lowe, but they appear on, I forget what the term is, but Tina Fey has this term for like when a person who's being lampooned in a skit comes and joins
the
skits.
Confronts their impression.
Yeah, like she said, she had it for when Sarah Palin showed up. like this is one of the first. This is one of the most notable instances that I remember. Because there was the Joe Pesci show that Jim Brewer hosted.
The Joe Pesci show,
and they come on the show and they're like, "You talking about us?"
And
since
Alec Baldwin is on the show so much,
yeah.
he would do his De Niro impression on the Joe Pesci show sketch.
Yeah.
But he wasn't there this episode, so Colin Quinn is just sitting there, having no legitimate Robert De Niro impression, but because De Niro was there as well, as a big De Niro fan, he had never once ever appeared on SNL. Ever.
Yeah.
This is his first time.
It took like 4 or 5 years later, he finally hosted once.
Leaking my dick.
Yes, that great terrorist watch list.
Was it for, was it there promoting Showtime?
I hope not.
That sure seems like a movie he'd go.
And I don't know if Joe
Pesci was Fuck the Fockers.
I don't think Joe Pesci's hosted SNL.
He has.
Oh, he has?
No, I'm thinking of Tomei, actually. Yeah.
No, I think he has.
Yeah, I want to say he has.
Yeah, I remember. Mm-hmm. Pretty sure it was him and whatnot, like Jim Brewer, that it was like going to a jeweler to get a pinky ring and testing out what does it look like when you punch somebody.
Yes. That did happen. That did happen. Do you not have a clip of this?
No, because it's just like,
It's only that Joe Pesci is clearly reading a cue card and says, "I'm not a man who resorts to maniacal movements," and like it's such a great moment ruined by his mispronunciation of maniacal.
Another comedic institution this week, April 13th, 1997, The Simpsons episode "The Canine Mutiny" airs. Features Bart getting a credit card using the pseudonym Santos L. Halper.
Oh yes.
He orders a new dog named Laddie, who was voiced by
Frank Welker.
He gives away Santa's little helper when all of the things he bought with the credit card are repossessed, but it has this great exchange from Homer and with Bart.
I want Santa's little helper.
Well, crying isn't going to bring him back unless your tears smell like dog food. So you can either sit there crying and eating can after can of dog food until your tears smell enough like dog food to make your dog come back, or you can go out there and find your dog.
You're right. I'll do it.
Rats. You almost had him eating dog food.
I also am partial to, are you wearing a tie to impress the dog? Do you think he noticed?
Yes. Anytime any of our friends show up dressed up, it's like, do you think he noticed?
And the end of the episode with Chief Wiggum singing Jamming.
Oh, wow.
Jamming. Yeah.
That was
is the end of season
as
8.
As a dumb teenager, I was like,
close.
Somebody finally got high on The Simpsons.
Yeah.
And it was Chief Wiggum. It seemed very subversive at the time.
Yeah.
Well, it's my favorite song.
That guy had medical marijuana because if he didn't smoke it, he'd be more blind.
Games this week, still not a lot. Everything's still pretty quiet. We just talked about Blast Corps on N64.
We streamed it on our YouTube channel, youtube.com/lasertime. That game rules.
That game is exquisite. It's on Rare Replay if you have an Xbox One. Absolutely 1,000,000,000% recommend. It's just dump trucks and bulldozers blowing up the world, and then you go to the moon. Psychic Force came out on PS1, a 1995 fighting game in Japan that was finally ported to the West in April. Do not remember anything about it.
I rented it once, and purely because of the concept, which is it's fighting
like
game.
It's like Tekken, you can fly.
You're flying.
You can fly.
So you're flying, throwing fireballs. It's basically like an episode of Dragon Ball Z where you're just throwing fireballs from each other while
it's so clearly constrained in a cube.
Yeah. There's like no ring outs, and like you can juggle people or something. But still pretty quiet for games right now. The summer and fall of 97 get pretty nuts, but not a lot this week. We'll go out of 1997 with Block Rockin' Beats, the most 1997 thing I can think of.
Chemical Brothers.
And when we come back this week, 2007. Back with another one of those Block Rockin' Beats.
Mr. and Mrs. Internet and all the ships at sea, it's time for Diana's Classic Corner. We look even further back in time this week to see if there's anything worth a watching. And for the week of April 7th through April 13th, there is literally only one movie, and it is from April 13th, 1967, 50 years ago this week, Casino Royale, the most accurate and faithful depiction of James Bond ever put on film. Fuck no. Oh my god. If you have not seen the 67 Casino Royale, get ready for craziness. It's got a ridiculous cast. David Niven, Peter Sellers, Ursula Andress, Woody Allen, Barbara Boucher, Orson Welles for some reason, George Raft for some reason, a seal for some reason. It had five different directors, and then one of them, his job was to sort of like, well, assemble with whatever we have into a movie. So it makes no sense. It suddenly changes from whatever it is to something else, and then characters pop up again 45 minutes later, and you're like, wait, who's that guy? Oh, wait, that was that guy from, like, way back. Is he in, he was in Scotland, but now they're in India, I think, or they're in Germany. I don't know. It is such a freaking mess that I would say the story behind it is more interesting, but the movie itself is so interesting just because it's... I've never seen a movie that's more of a haphazard disaster, frankly. But that doesn't make it not compelling. It's got some incredible sets. It's got some groovy swinging 60s stuff, Burt Bacharach music, and the theme by Herb Alpert and the Tijuana Brass that we mentioned a couple weeks ago from Saturday Night Live. And I kind of recommend it just to see how fucking crazy a movie can get. You know, get some California medicine and just watch Casino Royale from 1967. Oh my god, it's so weird. And yeah, look into the story and the background story, because Peter Sellers thought he was going to be a real James Bond, and no, he didn't get to be. So that's it for this week's Stay Classic.
Beyonce and Shakira, backed up by a Nintendo 64 trumpet. Beautiful Liar is on the charts. Again, Beyonce and Shakira. It's not number one this week, but it is just charting, because the other top songs we played this week, or this year in the 2007 segment, include Girlfriend from Avril Lavigne, which we've already played.
Yeah.
Glamorous from Fergie. Sweet Escape. We've already played all those, bringing us in.
I'm amazed that you could get Beyonce and Shakira together. It's like so much woman.
Yeah.
The tape should fucking melt.
And that they would be topped by Avril Lavigne.
Yes. They are not number one this week. And it's crazy, the comments on the video, it's like them arguing over, like, who is a better dancer, who has more hips, and, like,
who, are they lying?
And, like, who, like, oh, this person totally invented this thing in video. And it's like, no, there were two decades of music videos before both of them. So they didn't invent anything that they're doing in those videos.
It's the first video with a wind machine.
Yeah, it's like, were they grinding up on stuff? It's like, no, I could. You should watch some more 90s videos.
Watch more 80s videos.
80s videos.
For some reason,
yeah.
Just watch Lemonade. And
oh, man.
It is, like, I don't know where else you're going to see Beyonce destroying cars with a monster truck. It's so amazing.
Dude, reenacting scenes from Daughters of the Dust? That's a pull.
I know, right?
What's
Diana talking about?
Shut up.
But what's crazy is the video, near as I can tell, at least the ones that I saw, the versions, it's still 4:3, which is a crazy thing to remember. Again, that like 2004, 5, 6, even 7, like the modern world that we live in now doesn't really start until 08 and 09. The iPhone is not a real thing yet in 2007. It's a real thing this summer. And streaming video, watching Netflix on your Xbox, like none of that exists yet. Like it's still so early for what we consider modern things. The way we consume and interact with anything. Yeah. Twitter is barely a thing. Like it's just not the same landscape at all. And so even this video with Beyonce and Shakira with millions of dollars, seemingly still a 4:3 video because not everyone has a widescreen TV.
Yep.
Or even HD.
Yep.
It's just such a different world. But other albums from Tiësto, and I couldn't recognize hardly anyone else because there's a billion albums out every week now. But Blonde Redhead, Cloud Cult, I have no idea what any of these things are. But if an album stands out to you, let me know. News this week, 2007, April 12th, Funny or Die launches with The Landlord, which is Will Ferrell being harassed by Pearl, his landlord.
Adam McKay's daughter?
Yeah.
And
This Pearl is thanked in Adam McKay's Oscar acceptance speech.
Wow.
For Big Short.
This line kills me every time. And Pearl, as an infant
and
toddler.
It's astonishing to think she's what, like maybe in high school at this point?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, yeah.
She's probably like
12.
Yeah, like 12, junior high maybe. But this exchange, where she's drunkenly asking for her money.
I want my money.
You need to relax.
Yeah.
Uh-uh.
I want my money.
Hey, don't call me. I'm a grown man. God, you're mean.
Man. I want my money.
The god you're mean.
And then she's asking for alcohol at the end, right?
Yeah,
I gotta get my drink on.
I'm not doing so good, Pearl.
How did you find the censored version?
That's what Funny or Die uploaded.
Well, that's a YouTube clip because Funny or Die, they still do host their own videos.
Yeah, but this is the Funny or Die channel.
Oh, is it?
Verified, but they uploaded a censored because, like, I'm sure they want to share with more people or whatever because she's cussing a lot.
We don't have a segment here, and it's going to make us, in 3 years, we'll sound like old fuddy duddies for internet videos.
Yeah.
Because this is the first. Kind of one of the first breakthrough ones where, like, the fucking news was talking about this video.
Yeah, there had been, like, viral things before, sure, but, like, this was, like, a web-only
thing.
And I thought I heard that, like, Funny Your Die hasn't beat this in terms of views. And what a great way to launch a site.
And it's really, like, fun. It is very much a YouTube-esque video. Like, very simple shots.
No microphones at all.
Yeah, and it's like...
in-camera sound.
Yeah, now you watch Funny Or Die, and it's like, we got all the celebrities we could to do this PSA, and it's shot like a a movie.
Like super production values with costumes and sets. Yeah. And
I still love James Franco, How to Cry.
Oh, man.
Like, him teaching his brother how to cry. It's
him
so
teaching his brother how to deal with green screen is my favorite. Yes, just throwing things at him. You're on a hoverboard!
Yeah. So when I was in Spider-Man 3.
But Funny or Die itself, it's like a site where people can submit their own videos, and it's kind of like got a voting system, which at the time was innovative. You could vote funny or die.
And is this video hot or not?
Yes.
Yeah, except that if it went all the way die, the video deletes itself.
Wow.
And never comes back.
Ah.
Nice.
I don't even know how much that functionality is still in the site. I know they still make their own videos, but I don't see them there. Mm-hmm. Sorry, Funny or Die.
Yeah.
I don't know. I like the landlord. I have to say, Good Cop, Baby Cop, I prefer much more. Yeah.
Is Baby Trashes Las Palmas, is that a Funny or Die?
I don't know.
Oh, well, look that.
I don't know. Also, Gay of Thrones. Oh, my God. Gay of Thrones, you guys, I know. Brett, you don't watch Game of Thrones. I'm not talking to you. But you guys, do you watch Gay of Thrones?
Yeah, well,
I don't know.
Chris is busy.
You fucking have to. He does. It's this ridiculously flamboyant hairdresser who's a huge Game of Thrones fan, and he does recaps. Huh. Like, they come out every Tuesday, and he's like, okay, and then Christina Aguilera, she's got fucking dragons, and then she is talking to Munch Munch, and he is like, girl, you can't do that, but she's like, I got pussy power, I can do what I want. And then the dragons, like, burn fucking everybody. That was a terrible impression. That was more Valley Girl. I love it, though. Gay of Thrones is the best.
We'll start our movie discussion with this mystery movie that you'll never guess in a million years.
An ancient wizard. A child with a secret. A woman with a past.
How y'all doing?
A galaxy torn asunder. A cop on the edge.
Where are my freaking pants?
That should be the giveaway. That should be the giveaway. But this is the... Oh, man, this movie...
This is Aqua Teen Hunger Force movie film for theaters.
Aqua Teen Hunger Force film for theaters. The only movie I've ever seen on Amazon Digital you can buy for $1.99 forever. Because it's... like, Aqua Teen has... We did a Laser Time called Animated Endings That Matter because they... Because the last episode of Aqua Teen was last year, and it was sort of like, oh, that's the legit animated finale. Most cartoons don't get good finales. Yeah. And then they, of course, release an episode online that negates everything. Because they're Aqua Teen, but they keep rerunning it, and I love Aqua Teen now.
Took me a long time to warm up to the show.
Oh, I loved it immediately.
Because a couple of them, I'm like, it's just that random fucking... it's not a joke.
There's no satisfying story here.
Yeah, that's just a bunch of random jokes. Like, I could write that. Yeah. And then there was like... The episode with the two aliens who have the dealership.
Yeah.
I was like sick, and I'm like,
Commence the jiggling.
And then
I don't understand. My dad is a dealership, bro.
It's like, you ever just want to like bury your face in someone's chest and just feel safe?
Is that dude still on your yard? In your yard? Yeah, he looks dead. Well, when he wakes up, make him drink.
Still, Adult Swim's only movie.
And this was special in that it was widescreen when Aqua Teen was not.
Yeah.
And it's just, it's more, again, it's the movie's not great.
I like this. I like the show enough to go see this in theaters.
Yeah, me too.
Wow.
Me too.
In movie film four
theaters. No, I was excited. This is the second date I went on with the last person I was really involved with before my girlfriend. And we walked out pretty.
Yeah.
Jesus Christ.
I went to I went on a first date to this movie.
Really?
It was an only date. With this person, but yeah. I remember nothing of the movie.
I tried watching it again, but like more than anything, it feels like. Remember when like Family Guy's coming back with a movie, and like this isn't a movie. This and Futurama. This is three episodes, and that's what this feels like. Even though there are through lines for the film, it just. It. I think it's like the Tim and Eric movie.
Yeah.
You cannot watch an entire film of that.
Yeah.
It doesn't work.
Yeah.
With no structure or anything like that. And it's more notable to me of the things surrounding it, because we missed the news of like
the
Boston guerrilla promotion, someone assuming was a terrorist event, that they announced they were making this movie. I think there's an entirely deleted movie. And the Adult Swim is doing those bumpers and like Aqua Teen movie, we're still working on it, and no one knew when it was coming out. This is the only trailer that released some of the stuff that's not in the movie, and then April Fool's Day. This actually happened. I love it. Like they're just gonna play the Aqua Teen movie, and everybody's assuming it's Aqua Teen. It's April Fool's Day, they're not gonna play the movie,
but you're like, well, what are they gonna do?
And they start out, it is the movie with the dialogue, and then it diminishes to a postage size stamp, which I can't bear. I was watching, it's diminished to where like it's a picture in picture. They run a Family Guy marathon with the Aqua Teen movie before it's in theaters, playing on TV in the bottom corner of your screen. And I can't verify whether or not it was the movie, because it was too small to make out what was happening.
But you couldn't hear it anyway.
And so they turned the sound off. But the movie played over three episodes of Family Guy.
Was it the movie? Was it the deleted movie?
Yeah.
Or was it something else?
I don't know. I cannot verify.
And then, Shake is a voice in, Venture Brothers?
Your Pretty Face is Going to Hell. Dana Snyder's in that as well. Aqua Teen is really good, though. And I think Space Ghost is why we have Adult Swim. But Aqua Teen Hunger Force is why... almost why everybody watched Adult Swim. Yeah. Futurama and Family Guy deserve a ton of credit for that.
Yeah, sure. Yeah. But those three together are definitely...
But it was their biggest original show, so like, even in their promos now, it is Aqua Teen members, because Adult Swim owns that wholesale.
Yeah.
And it's made in Atlanta. Love that.
They really broke the fourth wall during that April Fool's episode when Peter said, "Hey, Lois, remember the time that Aqua Teen played in the corner of a show?"
Pete, I'm holding iced tea.
Also out this week is Slow Burn, Ray Liotta, L. Cool J, Mekhi Phifer.
Not terribly notable, except that it was shot in 2003. And it premiered in 2005.
The old dogs did.
I don't know exactly why. It doesn't seem all that altogether interesting. Got bad reviews.
It means they couldn't sell it to distributors, or they ran out of money.
That cast, were they thinking, like, maybe in 2 years these guys will be more famous?
Nora Timmer, my best prosecutor.
As an assistant DA of color,
she's better suited to kick ass in certain neighborhoods than the rest of us.
That's Ray Liotta.
The Ray Liotta is running for mayor, and as a prosecutor that's black.
All my life, I wanted to be mayor.
if Ray Liotta's going to narrate it, I'm in.
And then also out this week, Lonely Hearts, John Travolta, Jared Leto.
I got to hear a clip of this trailer. It's because it's James Gandolfini narrating the trailer. And
RIP. Never heard of this.
Hard to say whose voodoo was working on who. She was good looking, all right, but damaged goods.
Martha.
Raymond.
May I show you to a table?
House room service.
But the day them two figured each other out was the beginning of a bad end for a lot of people.
So I don't want to go off too much about this, but this I ended up researching the most because it is a true crime story. Mm. And if you are a true crime fan and you hear the names Raymond and Martha, you're probably giddy right now.
Because, Martha, why'd you say that name?
This is the third movie about the Lonely Hearts Killers. Originally done in 1970 with the Honeymoon Killers and Deep Crimson sometime in the 90s. A man and a woman. Raymond has this. I don't know how much to say. Normal dude apparently got hit on the head and went crazy and started seducing women through personal ads. Not a great looking dude. Stealing their shit. Meets this woman, Martha. Pulls the game on her. She ends up following him home with her children. And he's like, I'll hang out with you. You got to get rid of the children. So she did. She sent her children away to live with him. And he's like, well, that's pretty devoted. Let's do this together. They ultimately killed between 12 and 20 people.
Whoa.
Together as con artists. Yeah, aw.
That's a nice thing. Nice bonding exercise.
Yeah,
I'm glad she sent the kids away.
It's a horrifying tale of Ray, what's his name? Raymond Fernandez and Martha Beck. Ray inviting women into their home, she would usually play his sister. Sometimes he would sleep with her. That would get Martha mad, and she would beat them to death with hammers or drown any children that were involved with these.
That's really taking role play to an old.
They got world. Ultimately were executed for the crime of killing a woman, and then Martha later drowned her 2-year-old daughter. And they killed this woman because they drugged her, and they were just going to steal from her. But her kid came in, and so they punched her. They were worried the mother would wake up and see the bruises, so they shot the mother and then drowned the daughter.
Oh my gosh. And
again, that's... Don't ask me for any details about the movie, but that's what this is about. Man, and it is played by Jared Leto and Selma Hayek.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
And if you look at pictures of this couple, like, how did you get there with this casting? It's one of the most beautiful couples I could ever imagine.
Wow. I mean, I like the look of it, just looking at the trailer. I mean, it's very classic film noir.
It is, with a fucking... sad horn and James Gandolfini.
Sepia tone.
Banner week for Italians narrating movies.
Yeah.
Then Pussy had to walk into my life.
Also this week, Perfect Stranger. Not that Perfect Stranger.
Yeah, let
singular.
Let me hear that trailer. It's a perfect description of this film.
Okay.
Halle Berry is a journalist. Who goes undercover to expose a businessman played by Bruce Willis who killed her childhood friend?
Giovanni Ribisi
is a hacker extraordinaire and he's funding that info. Where's my music?
Hang on, we got a better trailer here for this same movie.
I thought I did a great job.
Grace. Now it's up to one reporter.
I saw Grace a few days ago. She wanted me to chase down Harry.
I'm already bored of this.
In hindsight, wasn't my version better. I told you the story.
Well, the one you labeled better trailer is the real one.
Yes.
Flip that. But yeah,
I didn't want to ruin it for you.
Halle Berry, Bruce Willis, Giovanni Ribisi do something.
Bronson Pinchot.
Nobody
Bruce Willis.
Marklin Baker.
Yeah, nobody remembered
years
this movie.
Ago, killed Halle Berry's friend. She grows up to be a reporter. He grows up to become more successful, and she embeds herself in his operation to expose him as a murderer. And I'm guessing there's some kind of trapdoor ending that you're not going to expect. But I also recommend not seeing it.
Views were terrible.
I took your recommendation, Chris. I didn't see it.
Good job.
Two other movies really quick. Pathfinder is Carl Urban, which is a slight remake of a 1987 Norwegian movie that was nominated for Best Foreign Language Film in 1988 based on a Sami legend in there. Like, again, it's like...
Originally titled Hagar the Horrible.
Yeah. It's very... I think this one is a remake of a 87 movie is generous where it is like, but they're also fighting like 9-foot tall cyborg orcs or whatever.
Nowhere near this much CG and slow-mo in the 87 version.
But then also out this week is Red Line, a street racing movie probably most known for being funded by 2007, if you remember, where just a year away from the collapse of the home market. And this movie is known for being funded by a bunch of subprime loans right before everything melts down. So it's this movie that just kind of eats shit. And it's a street racing movie trying to do Fast and Furious stuff, but nobody remembers it. And then the biggest one of the week.
Mm-hmm. Where's the coffee and donuts? You can't have a stakeout without coffee and donuts. Ooh, that's creepy.
What'd you see?
Red smears.
Blood?
I don't know.
Only in Disturbia.
Titular line from Shia LaBeouf.
They live in a place called Disturbia.
I have not seen this movie. I remember being weirded out by this film because I'm a big film fan, but I'm also old enough to remember Rear Window, and this looks exactly like it. But the kids loved it. It was number one at the box office first week. It made a ton of money, and I think solidified Shia LaBeouf as a leading man.
So
Bart Simpson breaks his leg. He's looking outside, sees that Flanders killed somebody.
He's on house arrest and is looking at his neighbors and.
Seem to recall hearing that Spielberg was impressed by LaBeouf in this, and that's why he's in Indiana Jones.
Yes, and Transformers, also a Spielberg production.
But it got sued?
Did I copy my notes in there and out of my doc?
By the trust who owned the rights to It Had to Be Murder.
So if it sounds like Rear Window...
Totally does. It's about a guy spying on his neighbor and thinks the neighbor killed somebody.
The people who run the trust, who own the rights to the short story... It could only be murder, or it had to be murder, I think is what it's called, that Rear Window is based on, sued this film.
Oh.
Not Rear Window, because...
Do they know that the film's not a person?
It is also the author was dead. So, like, kind of fuck everybody in this situation. Yeah. Like, you got your money, Rear Window's... It just got remade with Christopher Reeve. Actually, that caused this script to be shelved, because the Christopher Reeve Rear Window remake, they're like, we can't charge people money for a TV movie they just watched. They shelved the script for a while, but it did come back. I have never seen this, but I was shocked by how well it did. I think young people really loved it.
I mean, it's also weird because Rihanna had a song, Disturbia, that I think has no relationship to this movie, because it was out like a year before this. And I remember when this movie came out, thinking like, oh, is that part of the song? Or it's like, is it the theme song to the movie? But I think the song predates this movie by a long time.
See, this is the kind of remake that I like. If you're going to remake something, first of all, change the name. Mm-hmm. Second of all, change something about it. So making it teenagers who people are less likely to listen to.
Yeah.
There you go. Yeah, I'm happy.
And it ultimately reminds me a lot of the Millpool episode. Because no one will listen to Bart. But directed by DJ Caruso, who would direct Shia LaBeouf again in Eagle Eye. And I Am Number 4 and a bunch. And in Return of Xander Cage. XXX3.
TV this week.
TV.
Starting out with something that I missed from last week. But so this show debuted on April 5th. The internet. Human Giant debuted on MTV.
Oh,
hey. The sketch comedy show that only ran like, I think, 12 episodes or so over two seasons. Rob Hubel, Aziz Ansari, and why am I blanking on the third person?
Paul Scheer.
Yeah.
Really good.
Yeah, and
really
they all good. Went on to bigger things.
And I think that's the only reason they didn't do more, is because they all... MTV wanting an irreverent sketch comedy seems weird now, given the identity of the network.
It seems like a thing they want to do every 10 years.
Yeah.
Like State, then some couple years off, then Human Giant, and then maybe we'll get something new soon.
It's kind of one of the last... great sketch comedy shows before the Chappelle Show model.
Yeah.
Like, here's a comedian, and you have a show named after you.
And you come out
and you provide all the context for the sketch, whereas Human Giant, like, it's just a fucking sketch.
Yeah.
Called Rob's Vagina.
Yeah.
You'll figure it out. We don't need to introduce this.
I grabbed a clip of one skit. I forget they're the talent agency run by Rob Hubel and Aziz Ansari.
It's been 2 years since you've been with us, and you haven't booked for us.
We're the top talent agency in New York.
Of course.
We're able to open doors for our clients. Now, if you don't have the talent to walk through those doors, why do we even have a relationship?
I think what Bill is saying is that if it was gonna happen for you, it would have happened by now.
Look, this is a little bit harsh, but frankly, at this point in your career, I think it's safe to say you're a has-been. You're old news.
Your relationship with Shutterbugs is over. Look, if there's anything you want to say to us, now is the time to say it.
Can I have some ice cream?
Look, you know what? I don't even want to hear it. Just get the hell out of our office.
Wow. Yeah. Same concept as the Pearl sketch.
Yeah. It's a banner week for kids getting yelled at.
Well, it's a reverse Pearl where, like, the girl is the mark.
Mm-hmm. Which one you prefer says a lot about you. Well, speaking of kids, April 10th, 2007, John and Kate Plus 8 premieres the reality show starring a couple who has 8 kids. I don't know if they're octuplets or no. I think they just spread out over a bunch of years.
Not even 6 of them at a time?
There was at least one or two twins.
Some twins and some like quadruplets maybe?
Some 2 births, 8 kids maybe.
Something like that.
You do the math.
But yeah, so this, it ran for about 4 seasons as John and Kate Plus 8, and then changed to Kate Plus 8 when they got divorced.
Yes.
I think in 2009, 2010.
It's very strange because this is a reality show, so the things that are involved in it, if your show is on the air that long and you're scripted, these people would be receiving residuals.
Yeah.
I believe I heard John now is a waiter at a restaurant.
Oh, jeez.
Despite starring in a highly rated show and getting no money from it.
So they had 2 kids who were born in 2000, and then they had 6 at once.
Wow.
Oh, my.
In May 10th, 2004.
So those 2 kids were twins, the first 2? Or were they like Irish twins where it's like one's in January, one's in December?
You know, the Excel grid doesn't go into that kind of detail.
Man.
I think it just says 2000.
Is it? I think the show is still airing.
Mm. It says season 5 was 2010.
Okay, so
I think Kate has a show, but the world kind of turned on John.
Yeah. Season 5 started on November 22nd, 2016.
Wow. I'm glad that, I mean, man, it would be really depressing if one of those kids died and they had to be like, K plus seven.
With a parenthetical minus one in a different font done way after post-production.
That spells disaster for you.
Oh, God.
April 9th, 2007, NBC debuts a short-lived sketch comedy show called Thank God You're Here, where famous comedic actors are thrust into a comedy sketch not knowing anything about it besides the costumes that they're wearing. Kind of like a Whose Line Is It Anyway, but for sketch comedy. The first episode's guests are Wayne Knight, Bryan Cranston, Joel McHale, Jennifer Coolidge, Monique, Kevin Nealon, Richard Kind, and Edie McClurg.
Holy crap. Yeah. That pretty good murderous.
Oh, seven.
Yeah, those are righteous dudes.
A real righteous dude.
But weirdly, the thing that stands out to me most this week is a show that I liked despite only airing for three episodes.
Whoa.
An action drama on Fox called Drive.
Oh, about, Nathan Fillion.
Yes, yes. People taking part in a...
Emma Stone is his daughter?
Yes, yes, yeah. Yes. Wow. People start... They take part in a mysterious cross-country race, has Nathan Fillion, as you mentioned, Dylan Baker, and Emma Stone, who went in 10 years from this show to winning an Academy Award. Wow. Let's just point that out.
Co-starring the guy who starred in Drive. The
really?
Movie!
Wow.
Yeah.
Huh.
I didn't love this show, but I did like it, and I was willing to watch more of it, but it was
so
real expensive.
They only aired three episodes on TV, then they put the rest online after it was canceled, which kind of a new thing at the time. Yeah.
And it was a bummer because Firefly had, Serenity was just a couple years before, and Firefly still had the whole, oh, what a terrible travesty that this show was canceled and murdered.
I'll watch anything Nathan Fillion
And so Nathan Fillion gets back on TV,
but
and
that's also
on Fox again,
and
three episodes in, forget it.
And I kind of liked it, too, because I like reality television, some shows, and one of them, one of those shows I like is The Amazing Race, where people are driving around, flying around the world. So this is I get to watch this. It's also kind of like Cannonball Run, and then people are eliminated. No, they're actually killed.
I think that's what this, the same way Lost was ordered by the network to compete with Survivor. That is literally the origins of Lost. Hey, JJ, make a show on a desert island. And this is a show to compete with reality television with winners and losers.
This also has the mystery of why are they racing? What do you win?
Exactly. I feel like this was one of those post-Lost sort of things where it's like let's have a mystery behind it. Have a mythology maybe. Things are slowly revealed, but it's such a bummer that the cost did it because Nathan Fillion in the car revs my engines.
Yeah. It's also one of the first shows to have a Twitter account and live tweet an episode. It's still up on Twitter.
Oh my God.
At Fox Drive. You go to I'll save you the click. You go to that. It is a super low res Nathan Fillion off center head, and the tweets are all like, When you did your first tweet back in 2008, 2009.
Hello, world.
Yes. hope you like the episode. Bye-bye.
I guess I'm
no
supposed
hashtags
to be here.
Here
do this.
Wow. There are tweets in April 16th, 2007. The next tweet is September 17th, 2009 that just says, Fox Drive, yo.
Yes.
Dude, there should that should
I
look,
hacked this
is a really terrible picture
I know,
of Nathan Fillion, dude. Yeah. This really kind of like,
I know we have a lot of LA listeners, but if you're in charge of a marketing social media marketing campaign for a product that's immediately canceled, please put something in the contract saying they have to delete all records, embarrassing records of this from the internet.
Well, the last one is like one of the last ones is like follow the guy who made the show
because
he's doing a new thing
because we're done here.
Yeah. Why are you still following this show?
Games this week 2007. Not a lot, but Super Paper Mario did come out for the Wii, which began as a GameCube game, and I think I was the first review for this, posted on Games Radar, and I was previewing it and was really excited about it, and then was able to post the review, and I don't remember what I gave it, probably an 8.
It was an 8.
I can't recall, but I remember really liking it, because Paper Mario is like taking Mario and putting it in an RPG setting, but everyone looks like a storybook, and everyone is 2D and flat and paper. And the game has very cheeky dialogue and plays on that notion of, oh, we're all storybook cutouts and whatever. And so you get a lot of meta jokes about the series and about being a toy. But the interesting thing about this was it was a little less RPG and more like platformer Mario stuff. And as you're moving left to right and it's all paper, you could push this button and it would rotate the level like 90 degrees. And now anything that was flat one direction because it's two-dimensional is now disappears. And now there's other things on this other plane. So imagine playing original Super Mario Brothers moving left to right, but now imagine you put the camera behind Mario looking down the track.
It's what happens to people like Mario in Minecraft. I'm like, Mario's very existence is thought of as a 2D element, and you can walk behind them,
essentially.
But it takes the RPG elements out of it that I love. The Thousand Year Door,
and that's why I liked it. Just as a this series would go on to experiment with its formula a lot. Recently, with Sticker Star and Paper Jam, and they try to play with it a lot, but. This I thought was pretty fun, and I wouldn't want them to keep going this route, but it was fun when it lasted.
And they didn't.
And they did. But that's really the only big game of the week. And then,
there was a 10-year gap in between a home console Paper Mario game.
No, Thousand Year Door was like 04, and then this was 07. So, but yeah, it did begin as a GameCube game.
And Color Splash, which was like a few months ago.
Yeah. There's a lot of them at this point, Paper Mario games. But comments from the site, bringing us into the show, 302010.net. Follow along on a post each week, and people leave some great comments about where they were when these events happened and how they relate back to them. So Eric Baker left a comment saying, Power Rangers occupies such an odd place in my pop culture experience. From 91 to 94, I lived in Okinawa while my dad was in the Air Force. We lived on Kadena Air Force Base, and although we did make regular trips into Naha to go to the awesome parks and toy stores, for the most part, we stayed on the base, which felt like a little slice of the U.S. We got exactly one channel, the Armed Forces Network, where they select a small chunk of programs from the U.S. and break it up with commercials for the Navy. Literally every commercial is for the Navy. Suffice it to say, when we moved to Derby, Kansas in 94, I was behind a lot of pop culture trends that my new friends were deeply embedded in. So I moved back right in the middle of Power Rangers mania, and I was super confused. All my classmates were talking about it and asking who my favorite was. The toys were everywhere, and it made no sense to me because I didn't even know it was a TV show. The ironic part is that all Power Rangers is just recycled footage of Super Sentai, a Japanese show that is where I was from, and I had no idea what it was. It's just so confusing. So that's a great, like, what? I thought I left this behind.
There must be so many people being like, oh, do you get, like, you've got, like, all those toys that you can't get in America, and he's like, what are you talking about?
And then you have to be like, no, Rita wants to kill all babies. No! She wants to marry Lord Zedd! Generic NPC says, I loved Blast Corps so much, the N64 game. For a birthday party the year I organized a pre-LAN LAN party with four N64s and four TVs and created an elaborate time trial bracket for the whole thing. I also may have made a truly embarrassing effort to force J-Bomb as a nickname for myself after the awesome power-bombing robot.
Oh, honey.
He's the robot that has jetpacks on him.
He's the best character in the game.
It's a cover star.
Other than the bulldozer.
And then Genghis Pro says, the two main characters in Rome actually weren't entirely fictional. Because Rome ended a few weeks ago. Two soldiers named Titus Pullo and Lucius Vorenus are mentioned in the writings of Julius Caesar, although a lot of license is taken with them in the actual show.
Yeah, I think so.
Not much known about them outside of what Caesar wrote, so that's not really surprising. But I think it's cool they were able to incorporate minor figures to give a different perspective on history than we usually get in shows like this. Famous deaths this week.
No.
Bringing us out of the end of the show. 2007, Barry Nelson dies at the age of 89.
That is the first James Bond in the TV episode version of Casino Royale. Wow. Tying it all back in with the classic corner.
Wow.
Yep. Where he's Jim Bond, American CIA agent. Yeah.
Jim Bond.
Bimmy. Yeah. Bimmy Bond. Is that the first 302010 Bimmy?
Bimmy John.
I don't even know how to, if you haven't.
YouTube channel people
don't know how to
get inside jokes. Apparently,
get that as a joke. Also dead, 2007. Johnny Hart, 78,
of BC fame.
The comic,
yep.
British Columbia.
Oh. Yeah, the terrible comic in Wizard of Id.
Yep.
And then Kurt Vonnegut, 84.
Yep. Yeah. I was real bummed out by this. I lost him. I think we lost him and George Carlin in such a short time span, and they were both so formative to me.
Yeah.
Love Kurt Vonnegut.
I felt this one. I was upset at work, and I was in a workplace full of kind of girly girls who were like all former, you know, sorority types. And I'm like, oh, fucking Kurt Vonnegut died. Yep. And like, huh?
Oh, and that's because he had kind of been retired.
Yeah.
And then he started writing again and then appearing in public. And he'd been in like Bill Maher's show. And I don't know. I love Kurt Vonnegut.
Yep.
Go read.
Slaughterhouse-Five, Cat's Cradle.
I love Player Piano has never been more relevant. And Sirens of Titan is just fun. And so is Slapstick. Love Kurt Vonnegut.
Yep.
That brings us to the final end of the show. You can go to 302010.net. Again, leave comments on the site. We always appreciate people chiming in. But the show is supported by patreon.com/lasertime, where you can get Dave's show.
And a wrap-up of this show from last year.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
plenty of shows.
It's
also,
like our, it's our one pay per view.
The yes, and there's also every season you guys do a wrap up of Talking Simpsons, yep. Your weekly Simpsons podcast that chronologically goes through every single Simpsons episode ever.
I believe you will have just heard. Springfield, or How I Stopped Worrying and Lovely Lila's Gambling.
That is one of the greatest episodes.
Yes. Florida.
Gambler.
Or that'll be coming out next week. I don't know where we are now.
We also do tons of movie commentaries. Oftentimes we do a movie commentary based on something that's had a recent anniversary. In the case of last month, we did Twister, which turned 10. Mm-hmm. No, wait. Twister is more than 10 years. It was about Bill Paxton. That's why we did that one. But we did Raising Arizona, which turned 30.
And I really want to do Hot Fuzz next week, people.
It's coming
Hot
up.
Hot Fuzz.
Yeah. Those are our Patreon shows.
And if you like this show, you might like Laser Time, which is sort of like this, but topic-based. A lot of clips, a lot of research. We tried to find the worst rap songs ever.
Man.
If you'd like to hear
some
Bart Simpson, Barney Rubble, and Macho Man Randy Savage spitting out the science.
The Macho Man, I'll be mourning you till I'll be joining you, Jam. That was amazing.
Yep.
I mean, we've got so many suggestions from commenters that I feel like we could just
do a sequel one.
Awesome.
Yeah.
All right. And if you like video game talk, there's also Video Game Apocalypse, which is just about video games. And if you want to talk classic movies and such, I am on Twitter now at ListenANerd.
And that brings us to the end of the final segment, the birthday quiz. The home movies birthday song. And, just the quiz, like we've been doing before. One male, one female quiz. So get your birthday brains going. Born in 1946, this man is a black belt in Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu.
Steven Skull?
No.
Chuck Norris?
No. Primarily a TV actor who has won 4 SAG Awards and been nominated for 2 Golden Globes.
Lorenzo Lamas?
No. He's most famous for 2 TV series, one in the 80s and 90s, and one that's still on today in the 2000s, the 2010s.
What?
It's still on today.
Both of them,
it's
still...
not just one show the whole
time. No, this is an 80s, 90s show that premiered 30 years ago in one of just an episode or two ago.
Oh.
Huh.
On a network that just started airing.
Tamarita? No.
Ed O'Neill?
Ed O'Neill.
He
has a black belt in Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu.
Are you kidding?
Awesome.
And he got it in like 2007, and he said it was the best thing he has done other than his kids.
Look at when you put a man in a headlock. It's cool. Right.
Like the best thing he's accomplished other than raising his children.
Punch pig.
But yeah, don't mess with Ed O'Neill.
Ed karate.
Ow, let's tap out.
No. Now, born 1971. She was a voice in Secret of Nim. She was in Little House on the Prairie.
Melissa Gilbert.
She was in Charmed.
Alyssa Milano.
And Heathers.
Shannon Doherty.
Yes!
Wow, I didn't know she's in Secret of Nim.
Me either.
According to the internet, she had a voice in that. But we'll go out with Little Lies from Fleetwood Mac. And when we come back next week with more of what happened 30, 20, 10 years ago.